Okay. Now we're going to get started. All right, welcome everybody. And again, thank you for coming all this way to the very far end of the conference center. My name is Curtis Song. I'm with Microsoft Consulting. With me is my good friend Jill McGuire, who's one of our top content publishers for Office compatibility and Office deployment topics. So, what we're going to chat about is getting ready to deploy Office. Right? What's the right approach? What's the right steps you need to take in order to get ready to deploy Office? How do you best prepare? How do you position yourself so that when you deploy Office, things go smoothly? It's very efficient. It's not too expensive. And that's part of the real goal. So when we talk about getting ready to deploy Office, we talk about, we call it the Office compatibility process. Right? We're making sure that your stuff that you've created in current versions or hopefully now legacy versions of Office, making sure all your stuff works and you're positioned to deploy the new Office and all your stuff will continue to work. So all the pre-deployment tasks, getting ready to get ready, that's what we call the compatibility process. So we're going to talk about, well, what is that process? What's the recommended approach? And then we're going to talk about some of the new features in Office 2013 and the new Office and about how those features and those tools facilitate and enhance the process. And that's going to be the very key message of the session, right? Tools enhance the process, not the other way around. We've seen a lot of customers and a lot of people and a lot of companies say, ooh, I got to get ready. Let me find a tool that does what I want, right? And their goal is to offset a lot of their work and ideally a lot of their risk to the tool. And we've seen in many cases a tools-first approach end up being a lot more expensive, a lot more costly, and a lot more time-consuming. So that's a key message, right? If there were a test, the answer would be tools support the process. There is no test. So feel free to not pay attention. Anyway, so then what we're also going to do is a bunch of demos. Well, when I say we, Jill is going to be doing a bunch of demos. I'm going to be yapping. When I stop, then things get interesting, and Jill will actually show you some stuff. So the good news is every time Jill talks, you can again start to pay attention. All right, anyway. So the compatibility process, this is in general what we recommend, and it's not, you know, rocket science. It's not anything brand new. One of the biggest things that we see is a difference from what some of our customers have done a lot is the first step. We recommend a discovery process, not an inventory process. And what we mean is the goal is to discover what's really important. Right? And the first item, collaborate with the business. Right? You're getting ready to deploy Office, you're going into a new environment. You're going to a new operating system or a new version of Office or whatever. Start with engaging your business areas first. That would be the very first step, right? Don't try and find everything that's out there. That's a lot of money and a lot of time, right? So then you discover what's important, and then you rationalize and prioritize, well, what's really, really important? What do I want to worry about first? And the goal of your discovery and rationalization efforts is to facilitate and get ready for your testing. Right, and your validation process and figure out, okay, well, what do I have to work? What do I need to test in order to make sure that everything I need to work on day one is done? And another key message is don't try and test everything. Test only things that have been explicitly identified through your discovery process as critical to your business. And that word, well, what is critical, can mean, you know, a lot of different things, and we're going to start talking about that. And then once you're done, you can start to get value out of your investment, right? You've actually purchased Office, and we want to make sure that you're not spending a lot of time getting ready to deploy so you can get value out of it. And then you can manage your environment and position yourself for future upgrades and future rollouts and future builds, right? And so we've seen that, especially with what, Windows 8.1, it's going to be previewed at Build conference in a few weeks, right? So that's going to be, it's a more rapid update cycle. So you want to make sure that you're prepared for that, and you won't have to go into the same discovery process cycle every time. The reason being is what we've seen with a lot of large customers, like 20, 25,000 and up, is it takes, on average, about 1 year or more to, once you decided, yes, I want to go to the next version of Office, it takes over a year in order to deploy the first seat. Right? Just getting ready, figuring out, hey, what do I need to test? Where's all my stuff? What's the right stuff? Over 1 year. And that's just too long. So, first thing, we're going to take each of those components. We're going to talk about each step of the process. Then we're going to talk about how the features fit into that. So first, we got discovery. And discovery, in my opinion, is the biggest time suck of your compatibility process, right? Figuring out what's important. And that's the goal of discovery, is to figure out what's really important. What we've seen a lot of customers do is take the traditional approach of, I'm going to inventory everything. We see that especially with Office, generally because IT groups don't have a lot of insight into how the business uses Office as an application or Office as a business solution. Right? What Office solutions does it take to run the business? IT generally doesn't know. You say, well, if I don't know, I better find everything first and then sort it out later. And that's what we see a lot of customers do, is they try and inventory everything. Unfortunately, we have tools that will help you do that. Inventory everything and then filter out based on some criteria, you know, just get rid of most of them. And that's your rationalization process, right? Find everything, then filter out only the things you don't need. The challenge is that with Office is that when you start to find everything, right, you get that big circle of what you have. And if you remember, I guess it's middle school algebra or trigonometry, that's a Venn diagram, not on the test also. Right, you get that, start with that big circle of here's what I have. That's your inventory. And then you rationalize that down to, okay, well, what do I really need? Right? Start by finding everything, then whittle things out till you get to what you need. The challenge with Office, though, is that the variance between what you have and what you need is huge. Right? When I talk to customers about if you want to estimate how many documents or how many Office solutions are in your environment, start with about 500 documents per person. So just last week, Jill and I were talking, and I scanned my laptop and my documents folder, my SkyDrive Pro folder, and I found out I have 1,300 Office documents. And I've been with Microsoft just under 6 years. Right? So one person, 6 years, 1,300 documents. Right? So scale that up to like 1,000, 10,000. Right? We're talking about millions and millions and millions of documents. And that can be very, very expensive, very, very costly to try and find everything. And trust me, I don't need to make sure all my 1,300 documents work in the next version of Office. I found out 21 of them are copies of my resume. Right? At least 20 of them are not important. Not looking for a job, I swear. Not yet. Anyway, so, and that's the challenge with Office, is it really doesn't make sense to start with 10 million, 20 million, finding 20 million data points, only to get rid of nearly 20 million. It's very expensive. So what we're recommending, like I said earlier, is a discovery process, right? Partner with the business areas and in a sense say, hey, tell me what it takes to run your business. Right? What Office solutions do you use to help manage your business? And the reason why the IT group doesn't have that insight is because of one of the great features and challenges of Office is that a lot of Office solutions just grow organically. Right? The development bar for creating something in Office is very, very low. So you can start, I'm going to start with a macro recorder. I'm going to build an Access database. Oh, look, this is pretty cool. And it just grows and grows and grows. The IT group doesn't have a lot of insight. And that's why we see a lot of IT groups start with inventorying everything. Hey, I better get that insight by finding what's out there. But it's a much more efficient, a much more, a lot lower risk and a lot cheaper. You're going to get a lot better results if you start by partnering with the business first. Regardless of any tool, start by working with your end users. And that's what we want to advocate, is start with the discovery process, right? Identify things that are explicitly critical to the business, and don't start with inventory. And the goal of your discovery process should be to figure out, well, what's really important, right? And so there's no tool that's going to tell you, this is the most important thing to your business, or this is the top 10 or 100 things that are critical, right? Because the ultimate goal of discovery is that it drives your test plan. Right? The goal of discovering things that are important is to make sure you know what are the right things to test. And I don't want to say it's impossible to test millions of things. It's just very, very, very expensive. And if you're not testing the right stuff, you're really not lowering your risk at all. And all you're doing is just spending a lot of time and a lot of money to avoid risk. You're not really managing your risk. So that message of, hey, just talk to the business and say, hey, tell me what it takes to work, tell me what Office solutions it takes to run your business, that message goes over well about 50% of the time. Right? Sometimes I work with customers like, yeah, you know, that makes sense. And we do that sort of already with some other stuff. That kind of makes sense. Another time, a lot of the time, these are the conversations I remember, is that I see a lot of slumped shoulders. It's like, oh, really? You got nothing for me? I can't go to the business with nothing. They're going to talk to me like I'm a big idiot. Really, you want me, business person, to tell you, IT person, what IT thinks it takes to run my business? No, that's not the right approach. You tell me what stuff I need. And that really doesn't work, and then that starts with, okay, let me go find a bunch of things, everything, and then start presenting it to the business, which eventually you're going to have to do to figure out what's really important. So the question is, well, are there any tools that will help me in that inventory or in that discovery? And so the goal of using a tool is to help automate and make it a lot more cheaper to get to the point of, well, what do I need, right? What do I really need to test? Well, the challenge of using any tool to help discover what's really important is that you're trying to use some type of technical criteria to determine business criteria. Does this technical criteria of file size, file date, last access date, file type, does that mean it is very important to run your business? And that's the challenge, is whenever you use technical criteria to derive business value, you're creating degrees of separation, or you're inserting some type of variance between what you want to get to and how you're trying to get to what you want to get to. So anytime you use any type of technical criteria, you're always going to introduce the risk of generating false positives and false negatives. From a discovery perspective, what that means is, as an example, I use file date. I want to just find all files that have been accessed in the last year. I'm going to start there. That's going to be my first discovery. So you scan things and you whittle out things and you say, I only want to discover things accessed or touched in the last year. Great. You've reduced your result set somewhat. But now you've generated a lot of false positives. It means you've identified things that really aren't critical to the business, and you've identified things that need to be in your test plan that people are going to have to test. Well, why do you need to test this? Well, someone used it at least a year ago. So you're generating a lot of work. And how do you know you're lowering the risk by testing things that were accessed 10 months ago, 11 months ago, 6 weeks ago? So you're going to generate a lot of false positives. Conversely, false negatives is when you use technical criteria and you miss some important things. Like say, okay, a year is too much. So I want to find things that were accessed in the last 2 weeks. Great, now my result set is very, very small. I only want to access things that people are actually using recently. Perfect, now I don't have a lot of things to test. However, you run the risk of missing things that are really important. Right? Apps that are used seasonally, tax time, end of year, quarter, end of quarter, that type of stuff. So you run a huge risk of missing things that are really important, and then when you start to deploy, there may be a problem and someone starts pointing the finger. Hey, didn't you test this? And that's the challenge. IT doesn't want to be the focus of that finger point. So they say, well, I just better start testing everything. And then go back through the cycle of, let me find a bunch of stuff, start over-testing, and spend a lot of time. So if you're going to use a tool, and I don't want to say all tools are bad. If you're going to use a tool to help you discover what's really important, make sure that the technical criteria you're using is as closely aligned with business value as possible. So to give you a great example of bad criteria, I'm going to talk about a tool that, unfortunately, we've created, OMPM. Does anyone use OMPM, Office Migration Planning Manager? I am very happy to not see very many hands. This is fantastic. So this is a tool that will scan your environment, right? It was created around the Office 2007 timeframe. And it will scan your environment for all your Office documents, and it will help answer the question, what's my risk if I convert this file or these 1,000 files, or these million files, to the latest file format, right from the binary .xls, for instance, to the OpenXML .xlsx. And it creates a nice, easy to understand red, yellow, green report. And that's very easy to present to management, right? Red is bad, green is good. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to scan everything, and just I'm not going to test anything that comes up green. Obviously, it's going to work, or else it wouldn't be green. But the challenge is it helps answer the question, what's my risk if I convert the file to the latest file format? What we see a lot of people use it for is, well, what's my risk if I open this file in the latest version of Office? Right? They use it, in a sense, as a testing tool. I want to inventory all my files, run a tool against it, and tell me what's going to work. Trust me, that tool does not exist. If it does, I wouldn't be here. I would have created it, and I'd be somewhere in a lot more relaxing and money-filled room. But I wish those rooms existed. Yeah. Anyway. So that's a challenge. So people use the tool to answer one question, but it doesn't answer that question. It doesn't answer the question, will my stuff work? So they end up identifying things and filtering things out using the wrong criteria, and they're not really lowering their risk because they're focusing on the wrong subset. So it doesn't get them any closer. Well, the good news is, with the new Office, we have something that's going to help. We have Office Telemetry. Right? It's built right into the new Office, Office 2013 Professional Plus, Office 365 Pro Plus. Installs the same familiar, you know, Word 2013, Excel 2013. But what telemetry does, the telemetry dashboard will help you uncover, is show me the usage of documents and solution. Right? Not just who's used it recently, but how many people are actually using it. So you can help better derive, well, what's really important by how many people are actually using it. It's kind of cool. What it does, there's an agent And the agent is built right into Office 2013, or you can deploy it to down-level versions of Office. And it will scan, in a sense, your MRU list, your in the registry, your most recently used file list, roll it back up to a database, and you have a nice, pretty little dashboard, which Jill will show, that says, okay, here's all the documents and solutions that are used in my environment, and who's using them the most. Right? So the great news about usage is it helps tell you what's really being used. It won't show you everything out there. It'll only show you things that are being used, and by how many people. And you can drill into it to see, well, are these the right people? Which is kind of cool. But we don't want to position this as a tool you can use instead of working with the business. We see this as a great conversation starter. So you run telemetry, you collect all the data, and then you say, hey, business, what Office solutions does it take to run your business? What Office solutions do you work with all the time that you need to use all the time? Well, tell you what, let's start with this list. We've got all the documents that we see you use the most. Let's start there. Right? So now you're providing the business unit some data that they can look at. Now they're going to feel, oh, that's kind of nice. That's better. I feel better. I'm going to work with you a little bit more. Right? Instead of like, you know, throwing it over the fence at them, you're actually, you know, you can demonstrate you're collaborating with them. You're going to get a lot better participation from business units when you can show them, hey, here's the value I'm providing you, and I need your help in identifying what's really important. So, and now with telemetry, we're able to go from, you know, inventory of trying to finding everything out there and then figuring out what's important. You can start with discovery by figuring out, well, let's see what's actually used the most, and we can use that as our starting point. It's really cool. So now I'm going to stop yapping, and Jill's going to show you about the dashboard.
Great. Thanks, Curtis. Any second now. Yeah.
Okay. Go back there. And we'll go back here. This is where we should have some on-hold music or something.
Yes, we were here at 7, and we made sure this worked, so.
Sending out.
Can you pull it out and try that?
All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to summarize what you just saw. Basically, well, I'll do the summary, and then we'll do the demo. And it just reiterates a lot of the stuff we talked about, is that please don't view telemetry as the silver bullet. Right? I am a big fan of getting the right data to help support discovering what's really important. But it does not eliminate the need to partner with business areas, right? It is a first step in that process, right? So now you can go to the business areas and actually say, listen, here are things that we think you need, or here are things that you've actually used. Now let's work together and figure out what's really important. And as you're trying to, as IT professionals, you're often viewed as, well, you are the ones who are pushing change on your users, right? So the biggest challenge to deploying that stuff is getting your users to accept it. Or they're going to put up a lot of emotional blockers saying, no, I don't want to do that. That's different. That's wrong. The more you can demonstrate that you're partnering with them, the better you're going to get, you know, better acceptance, better testing, better partnering, and they're going to probably be more apt to accept the change and provide less emotional blockers. So it works like that? Okay.
I'm going to use this monitor here. So sorry about that. Everyone, get this started. Okay, so Slight delay, sorry about that. So I'm sure by now you've seen a lot of demos here at TechEd. And so instead of showing you yet another demo, let's think of this as a tour, the Office Compatibility Tour. And what better place to take that tour than in New Orleans? So the first step on our tour, we've got a three-step tour, a three-stop tour today. The first stop is a tour of telemetry dashboard and the discovery data that Curtis described earlier. So I'm going to show you what that data looks like both before and after you deploy Office 2013. And I'm going to use Bourbon Street as an example to help you learn the difference. I'll also give you some tips for rationalizing the data as well. Okay, so this is telemetry dashboard, and if you haven't seen it before, it's based in Excel 2013. And so what you're seeing here is a view of the documents that are found on the user's most recently used list. And so as Curtis described, there are agents that are deployed to Office 2010, Office 2007, and Office 2003. And those agents are sending back the data that you're seeing here. So on the documents worksheet, this is the most recently used list. On the solutions worksheet, these are all the registered add-ins. So any kind of add-in solutions that interact with Office, those are listed here. So we can get a better sense of what the down-level clients are doing by expanding some columns here. So if I follow my mouse up here to the top, I'm going to expand this plus sign. And you can see now that we have columns for Office 2003, Office 2007, and Office 2010. And so what this is telling you is how many users are using the documents and solutions. And if we want, we can click through. So for example, this three-month snapshot here, I see that 124 users of Office 2010 are using it. So I can click through, and I can say, OK, oops, I clicked too fast. Oops. Let's see. There we go. So these are the users that are using, well, this is normal.m. I'm not sure why that click didn't work, but you can see all the users who are using any document that you click the link for. So one thing I'll point out, and you may have noticed, that there's a lot of empty columns here. And so the Office 2013 data hasn't shown up yet because we haven't deployed those clients. And so currently, you're getting your discovery data. You're understanding who's using what document and how many people. But you're not yet getting your discovery additional data about success rates and events and trends. And so to do that, you start to deploy your Office 2013 clients. And they're going to send in additional data. And I'll show you that view here. So this is the morning on Bourbon Street view. So it's less crowded. Think of it as, you know, you're there in the morning, not as many people, less crowded, you're able to do your discovery work.
Hungover.
Yeah, perhaps. Maybe you've been there all night, I'm not sure. Okay, so for telemetry dashboard now, this is the post-Office 2013 view of the data. And so you can see here that you've got some success rates, you've got indications of critical and informative errors. If you've had a variance in success rate over time, you'd see that information here in the trend column. And so you're seeing this. This is for solutions and also for documents. So Curtis talked about, okay, so this is, you've got some information here about who's using what. And it's kind of natural to start at the top of the list and say, okay, well, there's 100 some odd people. Is that where I should start? I should just start on the top of the list and move down. Should I set a cutoff point and say I'm not going to look at anything that's used by less than 50 or 10 people? And so it's important to use the rationalization process that Curtis described in talking to your business groups to try to understand if there's any trends that are kind of hidden within this data. For example, if you have a business group that only has 10 users, but they're using a solution that's critical to them, how would you know that looking at this data? You really do have to talk to them to know, because otherwise you might not scroll down to the bottom of the list, but those 10 people might rely on that solution or document to get their work done. Another example would be, as Curtis mentioned, in a year-end or quarterly software, it's possible that that hasn't started being used yet, so it's not showing up here. It's also possible to set your report kind of a date range for the report. So maybe, you know, that happened 3 months ago, but your report is only showing you a month of data. So it's important that you make sure that you're talking with the business groups so that you have a better idea of how to approach this data. But I can give you some tips to help you kind of shorten the list now. So, and I'm going to assume that I have talked to a business group. I've talked to the finance group, and so I do have a little bit of information from them. So the first thing I'm going to do is there's a built-in column here. So we can assume that we don't need to test things that are built in with Office. We're going to assume that those are compatible, and we don't want to even see those on the list. So what I'm going to do is there's a filter column here, and I'm just going to clear the one. And so what this is going to do is it's going to hide anything that's built in with Office. So it's not on our radar anymore. Another thing I can do, so the finance group told me that they have PowerPoint and Excel in their organization, but they're not concerned with that. What they really care about is Excel. So Excel is their number one application. That's what they want to worry about most. And you'll see here we have a column called Application. And I can clear out everything except Excel. And so again, we're using the discussion with the business group to rationalize. But the final tip is actually very powerful. So over here in the bottom left, you might see, if you can see these areas, they're called labels. And so when you deploy your agents, you have the option of setting up to 4 labels on each. And so what this will let you do is if you want to specify geographic region or business group or job function or some other label that will help you dig into the data later, you have the option of doing that. In our organization, when we ran the agents in our environment, we used Label 2 as a business group indicator. And so it's very easy for me to say, okay, well, what's the finance group using? I don't want to see what other groups are using. I just want to see what they're using. And so in Label 2 here, which, by the way, are set via group policy, I can just set that to say finance and then go down here and refresh. And so what this is going to do is go back to the database and just clear out everything that's not used by the finance group. And so I can scroll back up, and now I have a list that's customized just for them, and that's a good starting point to have that conversation with them. So that's it for this stop on the tour, and I'll give it back to Curtis to talk about more about the rationalization process and test planning.
Hey, Jill, can I give this to that finance group?
Yes, you may.
Can I do that?
You can print it.
Oh, that's right. It's just an Excel file.
Yes. Okay. It's just an Excel file. Or you could save it. Save as and send it to them. Yeah.
Cool. So since we already summarized what she said, this. But the important thing to note is that discovery drives your test plan, right? Start with discovery and figure out what do you want to test? What do you really care about? Right? And that's the overall goal of discovery, not to find problems, not to find things that are out there. For example, we see a lot of people say, I got to find all my macros, because obviously there's been some changes in macros. My macros aren't going to work. I got to find all my macros. Right? That data point by itself is worthless. By itself, it's worthless. What's more important to figure out is, well, what things are really being used so I can make sure I test those. If they have a macro in them, that's great. I'll test it. But just identifying things with macros is not a great starting point. And the first step, if you want to use telemetry, is you have to set up a telemetry infrastructure. Very, very simple to use. In fact, all the instructions are right in the dashboard in that Excel file. And the good news is your telemetry infrastructure, right, it's just an agent that deploys your down-level clients, a Windows service, just that's called the processor, and sends data to a database. Right? It's a very 1990s architecture, client-server. Right? Very simple. But that telemetry infrastructure can live beyond the discovery process, and we're going to see that next. All right, so after I've done my discovery, I've worked with my business partners. I've shown them, hey, here's how great telemetry is. They said, hey, that's super, that's awesome, Kurt, that's fantastic. Now you're ready to figure out, okay, what do I want to test? So now what we can talk about is, well, how am I going to test, right? I want to do compatibility testing. What do you mean compatibility? What is compatibility testing? What makes something compatible? Well, generally it means you can use your stuff in the environment, you're going to use your stuff. Right? So you're migrating from, I'll say, XP and Office 2003, and you're going to Windows 8 and Office 2013 or Office 365 Pro Plus. So you got to make sure that you do all your testing in the new environment, not the old, right? Or else it's really not a valid test. And to make sure that it's actually compatible, you got to make sure that your app doesn't have any bugs, that you can get your work done in the environment you're going to get your work done. For instance, if you find a bunch of bugs that have nothing to do with you being productive, or nothing that doesn't get in your way, then do you really care to fix it? Or can you afford to care? For instance, a lot of customers do smoke testing to say, I'm going to have a list of 5, 6, 7 things I'm going to do with every application or every office document. Maybe one of them is printing. So I open up a solution and I hit the print button and I get some wacky error. Report that up, failed, we got to fix this. But if, as a normal business process, you never ever print, is that something that prevents you from getting your work done? Is that an issue you need to, that's a deployment blocker that you need to resolve before you start to deploy Office? No, it's not. It may be something you want to fix later, but if it's not in the way of getting your work done, it's really not a compatibility problem. So then you got to figure out, well, okay, how do I ensure it's compatible? And usually people say, what tool can I use that will tell me, will this work? Spoiler alert, there isn't a tool. No tool will tell you, does my stuff work? Can I get my work done? Right? We have tools that will say, we found an issue based on our list of standard issues that we check for, but it won't tell you, can I get my job done? Right? The only way to determine if it's compatible is through user testing, because the only way you can determine it's compatible is you do your work, and the only people who can do the work are the people who can do the work. Right? And as sarcastic as that sound, it actually validates that end-user testing, or user acceptance testing, UAT, is really the only test that will unequivocally say, yes, I can get my job done. Yes, this works for me, which is important. No tool will tell you, can I get my job done? So the challenge with user testing is that you got to figure out, I got to do a bunch of testing. I would love to run a tool instead that will automate, tell me if this works. Right? But that really doesn't work with determining, hey, does my stuff work? So you got to figure out, okay, I got to do user testing. How do I do it? Where do I do it? And the first thing you need is some type of UAT or user acceptance testing environment that you can perform all your tests. So you got to figure out, okay, well, where, how, what do I do? Where do I do that UAT environment? Do I create a separate bank of machines that I have, hey, come on down and test on this computer and I'll rebuild it when you're done? I've seen customers create kiosk machines. They said, I got 2 computers in every building. When you're ready, just go down to these computers. Check out our new environment we're deploying. Test your stuff there. Right? That's one way. In large environments, a VDI is a great way to provide a testing environment. Because what it provides a lot of reach. Right? Through virtualization, you can just say, hey, just connect, go to this URL. I'll send you a link in an email. Go to the SharePoint site and click here. You'll automatically create a brand new remote session on a centrally hosted OS. It's great. So that provides a lot of scale. It's easy to reuse, right? Rebuilding a test environment is just, a little look, look, and all of a sudden your VM is rebuilt. It's great. However, in a very, very large environment, that's a big cost, right? Creating a virtual desktop infrastructure, a VDI, to host a huge bank of test machines, 10, 20, 30, 100, that's some significant infrastructure costs. It also requires some administration. So you can say, okay, I've got 30, 40 different people testing. I got to make sure this person gets that machine, this person gets that machine. When they're done, I know to rebuild it, allocate it to someone else. So there's an administration cost. There's overhead. But the goal of any UAT environment, of any user testing, is to make sure there's 2 goals. Make it as production-like as possible, right? So make sure you're testing in an environment that as closely simulates your production environment as possible. And then make it easy for your end users to test, right? Make it as barrier-free as possible, right? Because if it's hard for people to test, if you're saying, hey, come down to my desk and just use my computer that's sitting right next to me while I get my work done, they might say, oh, okay, I'll do that later, right? And so the challenge, the biggest challenge with user testing is actually getting people to test, right? And so if you don't make it barrier-free, people will come up with a lot of their own mental or emotional barriers saying, I don't have time for that now. I got more important things to do. I'll do it later. And then it never gets done. So you may estimate in your project plan, well, I'm going to spend 2 to 3 weeks for end-user testing because I estimate it'll take 10 minutes per solution to do this testing, and then we have X number of solutions, so it'll take this long. But if your end users are the ones doing the testing, they have to show up. So if it's not easy to do testing, your participation rates are going to be very, very low, and it's going to really drag out your deployment project. So with the new Office, we've got something to help testing. With Office 365 Pro Plus, right, there are 2 versions of the new Office. Office 2013 Professional Plus is the traditional volume license MSI delivered Office. Then Office 365 Pro Plus installs via click-to-run, leverages, it's based on AtV, and it streams now. And it's based on it's part of Office 365. That doesn't mean you can't use it offline. You can do all the same stuff. Both Office 365 Pro Plus and Office 2013 Professional Plus still install Excel 2013, Word 2013. They get updated differently, but what Office 365 Pro Plus brings with click-to-run is the ability to install in side-by-side mode. So you can install the new Office, and it won't uninstall previous versions. You can keep Office 2007 or 2010 or whatever Office version you have. So that's great, because that unlocks a whole new testing scenario. You can now use, believe it or not, your production computer as a test environment. Because what side-by-side brings is it reduces the risk and the fear of implementing change in your environment. Right? Traditionally, when you say, I got to deploy this new thing, that brings a lot of fear. Because what you're really doing is you're uninstalling the old, the warm, the comfortable thing, and deploying something new. That you're saying, oh, don't worry, it's shiny, lots of bells and whistles, you're going to be better with it. But there's a lot of emotional angst of, I don't want change, it's bad. I can do my job now, what's the problem? So that what this does is this allows you to deploy the new environment while keeping the old Office as your safety net. Right? So you're deploying change while keeping the safety net of your old environment. It's great. Now you can do actually production testing in a risk-free way by making sure that your current version of Office is still there. Right, so one of the things you can do, and just in case something doesn't work, and one of the goals of the new Office is that we're sure that most of your add-ins, most of your solutions are going to work in the new Office. Just use it. Right, and that's easy for me to say, because after this session I'm going to walk away and probably not see a lot of you again. So that statement by itself is very easy to say, but then the question, well, what if my stuff doesn't work? Right? And that's what side-by-side helps answer, is the what if. That emotional barrier of, I don't know that there's a problem, but what if there's a problem? What are you going to do about that? Right? And that can stop a lot of deployment efforts. We're deploying something new. What if there's a problem? Well, I don't know. We'll fix it. What if it's a real important problem? Right? So now you can handle that what if question by saying, oh, well, if your solution doesn't work in the new Office in Excel 2013, just open Excel 2010, navigate to that document or solution, and start using it there. Then we'll remediate it in our normal remediation process, and we won't have to stop the rollout. Right? So those emotional barriers of what if there's a problem can really stop, depending on who's doing the yapping, the yelling, or who has concerns. It's a more professional way of saying it. Right? And that can really help you with your deployment project. So the side-by-side really unlocks a new testing scenario. Also during testing, this is where the telemetry dashboard really lights up. As Jill started to show, once you have an Office 2013 client or later, it will report telemetry information. Are there any issues? What events happened? If I have add-ins, how long did it take to load? Did an application crash? Is a doc corrupted? Am I using any solutions that have macros? Am I using any solutions that have ActiveX controls? What about any unregistered ActiveX controls? It provides a lot of insight that can give your end users a lot of data about, hey, here's what we're seeing in your environment. So it can provide more reassurance to your pilot group if you're going to use your pilot deployment as your testing environment, which is now a very valid scenario, right? You can actually say, I don't need a U18 environment. My testing is going to be done by deploying to my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5% of users and start doing my testing that way. Yeah, do you have a question? What's the overhead? The question was, what's the overhead of installing in side-by-side mode? Well, I'll tell you what. Let me answer that after the summary, because we're going to talk about what it's good for, what it's not good for. And also, there is a session on
Thursday.
Thank you. About more about click-to-run. So we'll talk about that as well. So I'll get to that after the demo. Right. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over to Jill. Wait, there was one other thing. Oh, what I did mention before is that click-to-run is only available with Office 365 Pro Plus. Right? It's not available with Office 2013 Professional Plus. So if you want to install in side-by-side mode, and that's one of the biggest selling points and advantages of click-to-run, is now you can really significantly reduce your deployment time frames, reduce your testing efforts by deploying in side-by-side mode. So now I'm going to turn it over to Jill to do some demos, and then I'll get back to your point.
Okay. All right. All right, let me get the next set of slides going here. All right, so let's proceed to the next stop on our tour. So as Curtis mentioned, running two versions of Office side by side is a kind of safety net for your users who are piloting or testing the new version of Office. So they have the familiar and they have the new. And what better way to illustrate this concept than with food? So today I'll be using a New Orleans favorite, the Po' Boy sandwich, to describe the kind of the before and after or the current version that people are comfortable and familiar with and the new version. So for me, my current version is this shrimp po' boy. So it's my favorite and what I always order. But it's time for me to upgrade to something new like fried crawfish or fried oyster po' boy. And in other words, it's time to upgrade to Office 2013. So what I'm going to show you is how having these two versions side by side gives users peace of mind knowing they can get their work done. And also talk about what happens if something doesn't work and how you can measure the impact of that across your organization. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to show you is Word 2010 and Word 2013 running side by side. And I'm specifically going to show you, I have a couple files that I like to use. So this is my shrimp document, or my shrimp po' boy. This is Word 2010. And then next to it, what I'm going to do is I'm going to open my crawfish, so my new sandwich experience, Word 2013. And so you can see here, oops, just ignore that. Nothing to see here, yep. All right, so Word 2010 on the left, my comfort food, my shrimp po' boy, and Word 2013 on the right, which is something new, my crawfish po' boy. And so what I'm gonna do first is I'm gonna show you an add-in that I like to use, and I'm gonna show it to you from both sides. So this mathematics add-in here, this is what I use typically, Word 2010, and I see it's also over here on the right in Word 2013. And if I can insert the equations that I usually use here, it's not a problem. So that works as I expect. But over here on the right, this is my, again, the Word 2013, so I'm going to take a look at that. And one of my colleagues said this is calculating the yum factor of the sandwich, so it's also working as well. And so as far as I know, I'm not experiencing any errors. I'm not seeing a problem here. It works as I expect. So in this case, I'm able to go ahead and use Word 2013 without needing the safety net or the safety of my old version of Word. So let's, okay, so this was my crawfish po' boy. So I tried it, and it's actually working for me, and I like it. So let's try something else here. So I'm not sure if anyone here has heard of Ribbon Hero. So Ribbon Hero is it's like a training tool for Office 2010. So it helps users learn the new interface of Office 2010. And so what I usually do, it's actually a game. So what I usually do is I go to Excel to 2010. So when I play this game, I go here and I have up in the upper right, I have my Ribbon Hero button that I click. Oops, here it's down here. And then I can play this as I expect. So this is working as I expect because this is Excel 2010. But now I want to see if it actually works in Excel 2013. So I've been asked to use this by my manager, and here I am going to try it here. Excel, oops, let me close that. Just do this one more time. So when I go to open this in Excel 2013, I get an error. And so it's telling me that Ribbon Hero, the add-in, failed to load. So that's too bad because, you know, I like to use this as a training exercise, but it doesn't keep me from getting my work done. So I'm willing to try Excel 2013 for something else. And so what I'll do is, let me close this out. So I have a file that I work in frequently. I call it my TPS report. And, you know, I work with it in my old version of Excel all the time, but I'm here looking at it now, and I opened it in Excel 2013, and I just realized that this control here just doesn't look like what I'm used to. Like, in my old version of Excel, you can click the things, and things happen, and It's not quite working the way I thought it would. So I've got some successes and I have some compatibility events going on here, things that I don't expect. So in this case, what I could do is I could always go back to Excel 2010 or Excel 2007 and use that to open this version of the file. So how do I know, okay, so we've seen some events going on, so how do I know, how can I see a little bit closer into the system and understand what just happened? So what I need to do is launch a tool called Telemetry Log. And so we've been talking about Telemetry Dashboard. Telemetry Log is actually, it's also based in Excel, and it shows you a local view of what's happening on an individual computer. And so we can see here, we can see several things here. Based on the files that we just opened. So we can see here that the calendar control here where this yellow dot is, I see that there was a behavior change here. And I can scroll over to the right and I can see that it looks like that control was deprecated. So I'm going to need to get a new control or some other solution for working in my TPS report. I can also see that Ribbon Hero here failed to load. So in this case, it does a version check. It's not reporting the exact error here because even though Microsoft created it, it's not technically Office. So it's not giving me a lot of information. It's just saying that it failed to load. And so in this case, it's not going to load on 2013. But we can also see down here, there should be the math add-in somewhere down here. Did I miss it? There it is. So the math extension, the one that we tried that does work. So this is showing that the add-in was successfully loaded. So in cases of success, we don't even want to bother spending time testing those things. So we won't take a closer look at the math add-in because it's working. So we've seen some compatibility events or kind of some stomach issues maybe with these sandwiches. Like if Ribbon Hero and the calendar control were like my oyster po' boy, maybe they're not agreeing with me. How can I find out how, you know, we're all on this tour, right? How can I find out how you all are feeling, whether you've had any compatibility events? And that's where Telemetry Dashboard is useful. So this is going to show me, wrong one. This is going to show me what's going on across the organization or across the room, across the tour. And so we're going to go find these issues within that. And so I'm going to connect to the database here. Give it a second. Okay, so let's take a look at Ribbon Hero. And so I'm on the solutions worksheet, so these are the solutions that are registered within the organization. And I can go to solution name and I'm going to look for Ribbon Hero. I want to know how many people are having problems with Ribbon Hero. And so this, what I'm seeing here is a list of the Ribbon Hero add-ins, and there are four, and there's one for each application. And so what this is telling me, and the numbers may be small in the back, but what this is telling me is that there were 6, 4, 4, and 1 users of these add-ins. And of the users that are running Office 2013, it was only actually one critical event even occurred. So it's very low usage in this organization, like only one of you had an issue. Well, how do I know who? Well, I can click through and I can see, okay, here's the error, the add-in failed to load. And I can go see the session. So Anna Beattie, raise your hand. I'm sorry, this hasn't been working for you, but now I know who's using it. But I also know, more importantly, that it's the impact or the it's a very small impact. There's only one person. Presumably, this isn't preventing business from getting done. This isn't preventing her from getting her job done. And so this is another one that I can cross off my list. Just because one person had a problem doesn't mean you need to test it. So the other issue that we looked at was the calendar control. And you know, Curtis, I was just looking at my clock and it's getting a little close to 5 o'clock. And I'm gonna save the calendar control demo for our next, okay. Our last stop on our tour.
On the edge. So that's actually, let me switch, all right. Yeah. So thanks, Jill. That was pretty cool. So a couple things that I really liked about that the demo is, one, we were able to see that, yes, there was a problem, right? The add-in crashed. And side note, that ad, we used that ad in specifically because we knew it was hard-coded to look for Office 2007 or 2010. Right? We spent a couple months trying to find something that would break with Office 2013. This is the only one we found. And that was one of the goals, is that if you have an add-in installed, right, it's installed independent of Office. So we installed the Mathematics add-in, and it just works with 2010, just works with 2013. We had to search far and wide to find one that doesn't work. And it's because it does a version check at launch. Anyway, but the other thing is that you can now see the impact of, okay, we found an error. So does that mean, as Jill said, is this critical to the business? Maybe. But now we can see, well, how many people is it affecting? So it gives us a lot more data that we can use to help validate, okay, now we've deployed the new Office, what issues are we seeing, and how much impact are they having in our environment? A couple points is, when you're doing your testing, only test your critical solutions, right? Things that were identified during discovery as, yes, this is critical. I need to run the business using these things. Another shortcut way to say, hey, what's really critical to the business is by figuring out, well, what's in your DR plan? What's in your disaster recovery plan? For small shops, they may not have, well, I don't have a dedicated, you know, business continuity area or DR area, so I may not have that DR plan. But if it's really critical to the business, right, if your business, your building goes away at one day, it's not accessible, you have to go somewhere else, what Office solutions need to be working in that other environment? Right? Those things are the things that need to be tested. Now, telemetry can help you get there, but really, if it's critical to the business, you can't live without it, it should be in your DR plan. Also, the telemetry dashboard and the telemetry log will show you what happened. Right? It won't tell you, can I get my job done? Does this work for me? Right? So that TPS report you showed, we specifically had it because it has the calendar control, which hasn't worked in years. And again, we put that in there purposefully to show you an error. But that doesn't mean, that doesn't necessarily mean, this is critical, I gotta find a solution immediately. This may just be there that it's there, and you know, we know it's not working. Telemetry dashboard, that's one of the issues that it searches for. But it does allow you, and that's one thing you can do during piloting, is use the telemetry dashboard. Have your users test their stuff using new Office. If they run into a problem, then you can use the dashboard to get more insight and more information out of it. Now the IT group can go back to the business area and say, oh, you're having a problem? Let me show you what information we found out about it. And now the owner or the developer of that solution can then take that data and start to, you know, start to remediate it. So click-to-run also allows, you know, again, a new testing scenario, right? Testing in production. You can use your pilot deployment as your testing area. And that's a very valid, a very low-risk way of doing testing. It allows you to deploy a lot quicker without increasing your risk, right? And that, what that means is you save a lot of money, a lot of time. Another thought is that because you can have the ability side-by-side to test in production, right? There's no risk. What about not even doing any discovery? And just saying, okay, I've got the new Office, let's deploy it to a small subset of users, start to use it. What if it doesn't work? Well, then you go, you still have that safety net of your old version. In a sense, what you're doing is you're doing just-in-time discovery. You're deploying it, and this is what a lot of small IT shops do today. They're deploying it to a small subset and say, okay, just do your work. And that's that you're just-in-time discovering what applications and solutions need to do your business daily. So something to think about is that with click-to-run, it allows you to be a lot more bold, because you're not increasing your risk by trying to deploy quicker. All right, now we're on the manage phase, right? We're getting towards the end, right? So we've deployed Office. Now how we talk about positioning ourselves for the future to make sure that we don't have to go through this big process every time. Or if we're gonna do it again, how can we do it more efficiently? And so what the telemetry dashboard will help is that you can get a lot more data out of the dashboard than what Jill was showing you. Not because she was only showing you this easy stuff, but there's a lot more data that's in the database that we can mine using the telemetry dashboard to figure out more about your environment. So earlier I said, who cares? No, I don't think I used those words. A lot of people start with, I gotta find all my macros. I'm like, pish posh, not a big deal. That data point by itself isn't that important. But what we can find out using the telemetry dashboard is not only, well, what files have macros, but how much are they being used in the environment? So now what I can say is, oh, look, I have these top 12 macros that are used by 20, 30 people. Or more importantly, look at these 80 macros out there that are used by one person. I'm gonna get rid of those from my test plan. Who cares if a macro that's used by one person needs to be tested? Does that really need to be tested? Do you need to have a dedicated testing plan to test all those macros that are used by just one person? Or can you afford to test all those before you deploy? So now you have more insight. Same with ActiveX controls. If you have any office solutions that use ActiveX controls, now you can get insight of, okay, are they used by a lot of people? Really important if you're deploying Office as part of an OS migration, right? You're going from 2003, from XP to Windows 7 or Windows 8, and you have some solutions that depend on ActiveX controls, which are external COM components or DLLs or OCX files that are part of, on the machine, not shipped with Office. So you got to make sure that they're in the new operating environment. So having telemetry will allow you to uncover that data, and you can get more insight. And that has the figuring out, well, which macros are used by a lot of people, which solutions have ActiveX controls. Now you're getting more insight into how is Office being used by the business. Telemetry will also tell you, is this document being used as the front end to a back end data source? It's pretty cool. You can also help figure out, well, what builds are in my environment? So as you deploy a new build, right, you go from, let's say, build 15.1, right, Office 2013 and Office 365 Pro Plus, the internal build number is 15.0. So in every month, a new build gets released, and as you deploy new builds in your environment, now you can track, well, what issues have occurred since I've released that new build. So I get a brand new build, for instance, and I say, okay, I'm going to test this on about 20 computers. Then I'm going to use telemetry to figure out, well, how many new issues are surfacing because that new build is there? Or more probably is, now that I've deployed the new build, look how many fewer issues there are. And can use that data to help justify, hey, management, look at all these issues that aren't happening since I've tested the new build. We're okay to deploy. Or, hey, management, look, I noticed this issue which we haven't seen before. I think we should hold off and wait for the next update. You have that insight to help better manage your environment. And like Joe was showing, not only can you figure out what problems are out there, just in case, you can also figure out what's the impact, what's the scope of that. Is this affecting a lot of people, or is it just one person? And that can help determine, well, what's my appropriate remediation plan if I run into a problem? And it can help prioritize. So a lot of this stuff can be gathered in the telemetry dashboard from custom reports. And now, finally, Jill's going to show you our last demo about what you can get from some custom reports.
Thank you, Curtis. All right, so no trip to New Orleans is complete without a tasty adult beverage. And that is the final stop on our tour, a demonstration in mixology. So what makes a classic cocktail? It's simple. It's ingredients and a recipe. And the same is true for custom reports and telemetry dashboard. So what you do is you take telemetry ingredients and mix them together to create the perfect custom report. So I'll be your bartender as we tour this last stop. Okay, so if you remember from the last demo, we were looking at that calendar control, and I promised you I'd save the best for last. And so what I want to do is I want to find out about that calendar control. I want to find out who's using it, what group they're in, and how many files actually use that control. So what I can do is create a custom report. So on the custom report worksheet, what I do is I click Create Custom Report. And so what this does is it creates a pivot table that I can use as a starting point for creating what I'm calling my calendar control teeny, so my first drink on this last stop. So give it a second here to load.
So what's it doing now?
Well, it's going to the database, and it's pulling in some data. And it's what it's doing now is it's creating, we have a default report that we set here. And so I call this kind of the house wine. So every time you create a custom report, you see this default report. And so what this is, and if you'll follow the mouse down here to the bottom right, so these are my ingredients. So I have issue title down here, and then I have the number of times that the issue occurred. And so I can see in my report here in the middle that I do have an entry for the calendar control, and it looks like I've had 21 events related to it. But how do I filter out all the other events that are shown here? So that's easy, actually. We have what we call a filter, or I call it a strainer, so I strain out everything else. And so I want to take this issue title that's down in the very bottom right here, and I'm just going to drag it up to filters. And so what this is going to allow me to do is just search for that calendar control and only show calendar control issues in this report. So I'm searching for it. Okay, so now, again, we have 21 events. Well, that's kind of boring. I want to actually know a little bit more. So let's see. Okay, so what files is it in? Okay, so up here in the upper right are my, I call this my telemetry ingredients. And so I need to go down, and I've got to find the kind of the container they're in to find those, what did I say, file names? File names. So look up solutions. Let me go down.
So, hey, Jill.
Yes.
That's a lot of stuff there.
That is a lot of stuff.
Are they anywhere publicly documented?
Yes, Curtis, thank you for asking. I documented all of these items. They're out on TechNet, and we have a resources slide that I'll point you to at the end of the session to go just give you a quick pointer on where to find more information about each of these settings. So here we have file name. So I'm dragging the file name ingredient, and I'm going to add it down here, bottom right again, to rows. And so what I can see here is that actually there's only two files that use it. So I've in talking with the business group, I thought maybe it'd be more, but it's actually a really low number. So how do I know who's using these? Well, that's easy. I just need to go up and find the actual username ingredient. So it's actually down here to look up users. And again, I'm just going to drag username again down to the bottom right. And now I know who's using the file. So the thing is, though, Curtis, I don't recognize a lot of these names. Like, I want to know a little bit more about who these users are. And that's easy. And remember when we talked about labels? I have my labels here. So my business groups are labeled too. And so what I can do is to find out what groups these users are in. Again, just drag it down. I'm going to drag it down to rows. And now I have another row or set of columns added. So I can see that engineering uses one file, but it looks like the finance group uses this doc status tracker quite a bit. I can see each of the users who's using it, and the same is true for the other groups. So this makes a really good, this calendar control teeny makes a really good kind of starting recipe for other custom reports. So Curtis talked about customers often want to know what files have ActiveX controls or what files have macro code. And we've got a good starting point here, so I'll show you quickly how to do that. So the first thing I'm going to do is I don't need the issue title for this recipe, so I'm just going to drag this out. And so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go in and find the ActiveX control ingredient. And there it is. Okay. I'm going to call this, what should I call the string? My ActiveX control teeny. So I'm just going to drag it here. So the thing with the ActiveX control setting is it's either true or false. It either has one or it doesn't. So again, I need to use kind of my strainer here to filter out the ones that don't have it because I don't care about those and only show the ones that do. So in the middle of my report here, I have my filter set, and I'm just going to say, okay, so what does have an ActiveX control? And now I can see that list, and I already have the usernames and the groups that they're associated with. And you can do this for any of these settings here. Again, Curtis mentioned VB8. So I can drag out the ActiveX control and drag in, again, off on the right, down to the bottom right, as a filter, true or false. It either has it or it doesn't. I want to clear out I only want to see what has the VBA code, and now I can see that list as well.
Yeah, those has columns in that table are my favorite, right? There's has VBA, does it have any macros? Does it have ActiveX control? Has external data source? It's all true false information. And that gives you a lot more better insight into, well, how is this file used as a business application, like a front end, rather than just a spreadsheet generation tool, for instance.
Okay, so that's cool. It for our tour. Oh, sorry.
Yes, it will show you all add-ins that are registered and load when office starts.
Right. That's the solutions worksheet here. And I've got it filtered down to just show Ribbon Hero, but I can clear that out, and these are the add-ins.
Cool. So, custom reports are just super powerful because they allow you to get more data from the database than what's exposed normally in the dashboard. And so, as you know, Jill showed you, she said, well, look who's using the calendar control, because she found an issue title and filtered it that way. She could have selected any issue title, and all of a sudden the report's going to change. Now I'm going to see What has unregistered ActiveX controls? Where did it have a document that failed to load or an add-in that crashed? So let's say you're not ready to go to Office 2013 or Office 365 Pro Plus. Right? You say, well, I'm not there yet. I'm going to go to Office 2010, which is fine. The good news is telemetry as a tool is a lot better, a lot more efficient to use it than any other tools like we have, like OMPM or OEAT, to help you determine, well, what's really important. So even if you're going to Office 2010 or Office 2007, you can use telemetry to help figure out and get that usage data. Right? And that's the biggest part of discovery is figuring out, well, what's really being used, and now you know what you can test. So the requirements are you need one copy of Office 2013 or Office 365 Pro Plus to get the telemetry components out. You can deploy them to Office 2003, to XP. That telemetry agent is like a 1 or 1 meg MSI file. And you can deploy it, and it'll collect all that usage data. Right? And you can use tags or label to help filter your data so you can figure out, okay, what's being used by the finance group, what's being used by the sales group. Right? So you can provide that consolidated list that Jill showed in the first demonstration to your business partners to say, hey, here's what's actually being used. Let's start to figure out what's really important. Also, if you want to just evaluate telemetry to figure out, hey, can I really use it with Office 2010? You can install all the components on a Windows 7 or Windows 8 machine. Right? You can use SQL Express, which supports up to a 10 gig database, which will get you several thousand users for several months. I think it's about 7,000 users in a year. It depends on how long you intend to keep that data. But if you want to evaluate, hey, let's see what my environment what has, you can install it on everything on one computer in a very risk-free way. Going back to your earlier question about what's the overhead with click-to-run in side-by-side mode, basically you're installing two versions of Office. Right? So it's an extra, 1 or 2 gig, however big the source files are. You're going to see two sets of shortcuts. It's going to be in Windows 7, the start menu will be Microsoft Office 2013. What is the 2010? It just says Microsoft Office, right? So it'll create brand new shortcuts. And as a deployment project, we recommend side-by-side mode as a short-term mitigation only. We don't think side-by-side mode is something you should use permanently, because in general, having two things on your computer do the exact same function can lead to confusion. It is great as a mitigation, as a compatibility testing approach, but not as a permanent configuration. So, just to summarize, this is the process we talked about, and then we also said, the validation phase can be actually either testing, fixing your stuff, or actually during your pilot. You can choose how you want to do your testing. If you have Office 365 Pro Plus, then you can leverage Click-to-Run. And these are how the new features fit into each one of the different sections of the process, right? Theoretically, telemetry can help you with everything. I think it is most valuable at discovery. Right? Because we see a lot of people, when they start with Office deployment efforts, the biggest challenge is, where do I start? What do I do first? There's so much stuff out there. And there is. There's a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. So telemetry will help you sort out, well, what's really important first. So that's it. These are some key takeaways. Oh, yeah, the second thing is the tools complement process. That would be on the test if there was one. You can use telemetry to help get ready to deploy Office 2013 or future builds, or help you manage Office 2010. Click-to-run gives you a lot more of a risk-free approach. Right? You can actually deploy in production and make the statement, let's do testing in production, not something that'll make other people look at you like you have two heads. Right? That's a very valid and risk-free approach. Oh, so if you want to go to another session, the first session up there, OUC B217, it's directly above us. What, this is room 293? Yeah, that's in room 393. At 5 o'clock, right, so another half an hour, it's about change management and adoption. Now that you're done getting ready in your compatibility process, how do you present it to your end users? That's a great session. Also, if you want to learn more about Click-to-Run, on Thursday morning, we're going to have a session about Click-to-Run, how you deploy it, how you manage it. You can see how you can deploy it even on-prem, like using, let's say, Config Manager or whatever tool you have. Also, the last item there, if you have more questions about telemetry or Click-to-Run, please come to the office booth. Jill and I will be there a lot this week, as will a lot of other people. If you have any more questions.
They can also see us at Ask the Experts.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Excellent. Ask the Experts tonight, 6-something? After the next
session. I think it's 6:30.
6:30. Yeah. Thank you. We'll be there if you have any specific questions that we didn't answer here. You can come up later and talk to us. Also, the highlighted item, the Office Compatibility Roadmap, it is the starting page for all your compatibility needs. Right? If you want to figure out, hey, what's different in Office 2013? What does the telemetry dashboard capture? What's the schema of the telemetry dashboard database? What are all the tables and views that are exposed in the telemetry dashboard? That's all listed there. And that's, I think, all we have. So we're 2 or 3 or 4 minutes early. So we have time for questions. Otherwise, thank you very much for coming and hope to see you at the booth.